From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever the cape wearing, and forever my producer, the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Good to be here on another episode of Bob After Dark. Live, if you're listening to this live, and I know you got some exciting news to share about some other stuff here. But yes, another week in the books, 2021, off to a rousing start, not just here in America, not just in the world, but here on Bob After Dark, Bob.
Absolutely. Count, let's get a weekend update for with you.
Yeah, let's see. What did I do this weekend? Sometimes, you know, as of 2021 kind of remains the same as 2020, where a lot of the weekend festivities and plans that maybe would have happened this year, currently not happening due to the fact, well, still a pandemic going on.
Never ends.
So 2021 weekends, maybe not off to a rousing start. Pretty much the same as 2020 weekends. How about you, Bob?
Oh, you know, existing.
That's good. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Still got the day job going, so.
There you go.
Bumped out the day job, spent Sunday working on the podcast, so we're very excited to be sharing some news, and then I played some video games this week.
Oh, did you play anything good there, Bob?
I've been playing Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, I hear that's a very popular game.
It's very popular.
Yeah.
When was the last time you played a video game, Cal?
Frogger, back in probably 2003, 2004.
You know, I don't have time to play video games as much. It's tough because I got the show to deal with, day job. You know, the show takes up a good chunk of my time most days, every day. So I don't get a whole lot of time to be able to enjoy it. So it was pretty interesting to kick back and enjoy the me time. But then Sunday rolled around, and man, I was busy cranking out stuff for the podcast. So for our live fans, this doesn't appeal to you as much, but for the podcast fans, you guys are listening now because we're finally up and running. The old archived episodes are there all the way through episode 1 up through episode 57. I have them there. They're there. I spent most of my majority on Sunday dealing with title restructuring, episode redescription typing, making sure the downloads went proper, but we're all there. The new Bob After Dark podcast experience is only on two places right now. You can find us on Apple Podcast and Spotify. We'll be back up and running here. Hopefully with the other stuff, probably in the next coming weeks, we'll be on all the other podcast hosting websites. But for right now, that's our big ones. It's Apple and Spotify. And I am very, very excited to be back on the podcast land because we haven't had a chance to really do a whole lot. So it's very cool to be back, and I'm thrilled.
Yeah, no, you know, I know a lot for a past month or so here, people have been asking, well, when's Bob After Dark back on the podcast circuit? And you guys are happy to announce today, of course. You're back up and running. All the episodes are up. So does this mean now for people that missed some episodes in podcast land, they could binge listen to Bob After Dark?
They can binge listen. So every episode, if you guys were watching on the old RSS feed and the old Bob After Dark pages, our last episode upload was episode 50 with Mothman. So there was 7 episodes after that you guys haven't had a chance to listen to, but now here they are. We're very excited. It's back up and running. Bob After Dark is back in podcast land. Hopefully within everything, we'll be all set and ready to go. But all the episodes are there for you guys to enjoy and listen to.
Would you recommend binge listening? Or is that, should Bob After Dark be best in doses, or can people binge listen?
Why can't you binge listen the show?
Well, that's true, too. Well, it's spooky, Bob. How much spookiness can you take in one day?
I've binged some podcasts in my day. There's times I'll sit and listen to a show like Ghostly. I can listen to, you know, 5-6 episodes. Moth Boys, I'll listen to and binge. I try to get myself a few episodes behind. There's very few I listen to every week as they come out, or mm-hmm. every 2 weeks, every month. Because then I'm like, well, what am I going to do? So I'm excited to be excited to be sharing that with you guys.
This is big news, Bob. Breaking news here. Well, it broke on the internet, but breaking on this live show here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are you talking about this was the...
Yeah. This big breaking news, Bob. This breaking news.
I was confused about what you meant by that.
No, breaking news right now.
Now, folks, quick apologies on my end. I'm going to apologize ahead of time because apparently Apple Podcast is down for the reviewing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a new review up there, a good 5-star review.
Okay.
To the sticks, which I know you wrote it, I saw it, but for whatever reason, I can't see it now. There's a 5-star review up there. Hopefully, maybe they can, you know, copy and paste it and send it to me before the show's over. But thank you for the 5-star review, the Stick Switch. And folks, if you're listening on the new Apple Podcast and you reviewed before, please get a chance to leave a 5-star review because we need to get that back on there. So if you left a review before, now's a chance to re-review because we need to start over from complete scratch when it comes to that. So if you get a chance, leave the review of 5 stars, and we'll toast to you live on air.
Like this.
To you, the Stick Switch. I can't read it because it's down, but to you, thank you very much.
Thank you, Stick Switch.
Absolutely. All right. If this is your first time ever watching or listening to an episode of Bob After Dark, we are the weekly show about legends, lore, and the supernatural. We talk about everything from lights in the sky, ghost sightings, cryptid sightings, and, of course, what keeps Count Panic awake at night. We also dive into weird, spooky news stories of the week, and we take your phone calls if you're calling into the live show. Our phone number here is 219-845-1100. If you're listening in podcast land, when we're live on Tuesdays, you guys can call, talk to us, and then hear your own self on the podcast land.
It's mind-blowing sometimes to hear you back.
Speaking of mind-blowing, there's a crackling in the...
That was me right there.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks,
Kevin. I had to turn it off sometimes when I...
Thanks for cracking my eardrum. I appreciate that.
Sorry about that, Bob.
Oh, no worries. So, Count, you ready to dive right into the spooky, weird news stories of the week?
Indeed I am.
All right. So this one comes to us from our friend James from Peoria, who hosts the Dragons Inn Witchcraft Inn.
Yes.
Witchcraft... God, I can't think of his tagline. It's witchcraft, folklore, and something. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but it's a new podcast starting off. If you guys are listening, Podcast Lane, you guys have heard the promos the past couple weeks. James is a great guy, one of my best friends in the world, and he wanted to start a podcast. We talked about that a couple weeks ago on the show, but I digress. Dragon's Inn, check it out. But he sent in this news article from Central Illinois Proud, and it is the Space Discovery FM radio signal found coming from Jupiter Moon. If you're reading this word for word, this is from Salt Lake City. The Juno spacecraft orbiting Jupiter has discovered an FM radio signal coming from the moon Ganymede. And this is the find is the first time detection from the moon. It's not ET, said Pat Wiggins, one of NASA's ambassadors to Utah. It's more of a natural function. Juno was traveling across the polar region of Jupiter when magnetic field lines connected Ganymede when it crossed a radio source. Scientifically, it's called a dichromatic radio emission. Here on Earth, we know it as Wi-Fi, and we use it every day. According to Britannica.com, the Jupiter's radio emissions were first discovered in 1955, and over the last 66 years, more and more discoveries have been made about how these signals work. A member of the Salt Lake Astronomical Society once built an amateur radio telescope that could detect an electromagnetic radiation from Jupiter, Wiggins said. Juno's mission is to study how the planet Jupiter formed and how it evolved. Juno will observe Jupiter's gravity and magnetic fields as atmospheric dynamics and composition and evolution, according to NASA. What caused the radio emissions from Jupiter's moon? Electrons, not aliens, are causing the signals. The electrons oscillate at a lower rate than they spin, causing the electrons to amplify radio waves very rapidly. The process is called cyclotron master instability, or CMI. The electrons that generate the radio signal can also cause auroras in the far-out ultraviolet spectrum, a phenomena also observed by a camera on Juno. Hmm. So FM signals on Juno, apparently.
Well, oh, go ahead. This is my
hashtag pancake.
Okay. Yeah, set me up for that first there. Yes. Well, we all know it is aliens, no matter how much they say it's not aliens. Also, I'm glad they upgraded from AM. Usually those aliens just have AM radio, so it's nice to see them have FM radio. Also, no static at all, as Steely Dan said. So,
you know, count there with the FM. I saw Andy chime in the chat saying jet is everywhere.
Yes.
Are we being broadcasted live on Jupiter right now?
If it's 104.7 FM, then yeah, we should be broadcasting up there. So, good chance you're being listened to by the alien life forms up there.
Apparently, NASA's saying there's no aliens causing it, but I find it fascinating that something that, you know, we have to manipulate in order to create entertainment for you guys on the weekly basis if you listen to us on the radio is just like naturally like created there, mm-hmm. and it's pumping out signals naturally with no use of a radio tower or anything like that. So no end of the story where we see, where we end up, there's some radio a radio station ran by aliens a la Bad Stations, if you've ever seen that movie.
Yeah.
Bad Channels, there you go.
Yeah. What's the planet, though, specifically?
It was a Jupiter moon.
Jupiter moon.
It was
so,
one of, Jupiter's got a lot of them, but this one just happened to be that particular
so
one.
So right now, you have the hottest podcast on one of Jupiter's moons.
I'm going to say that. You know what? That's the story, and I'm sticking to
it's
it.
It's on FM.
You know, we're really big in Jupiter. There's two places we're big at, Kyle Panic. We're big in Wisconsin, and we're big in Jupiter, which leads me to my next question. Does Jupiter have cheese curds?
They always say the moon was made of cheese, but maybe Jupiter is actually made of cheese there, Bob.
It's made out of cheese curds.
You know cheese curds. Did you know Jupiter? It's funny because I was just talking to somebody about Jupiter last week. It's the farthest planet, right? It is the farthest planet away.
Farthest?
Jupiter? Yeah, the furthest out there. Jupiter.
Pluto was.
You're right. Pluto was. Well, Pluto.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter. So it's after Mars. It shouldn't be the farthest.
Okay.
There,
well,
right?
You know, I got
I'm
it back.
I'm really impressed, by the way, folks, that I was able to name that off for memory. I don't have notes in front of me on that one. I just snapped to it.
Well, Pluto, of course, they had their controversy with their
Pluto's
planet.
A planet.
You
know what? Bob After Dark declares Pluto a planet. I know we're not, like, the leading scientific community, or we're not, like, leading experts in, like, the astronomical world, but I'm declaring Pluto a planet over and done with.
But I was reading, to get to Pluto, it takes 9 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
Did you know that,
that's Bob? That's a lot of Bob After Dark episodes
you could binge listen to
all the episodes getting to Pluto. I feel like it's been 9 years since I've been able to get the podcast back up and running. But
Now they can. So just a fun fact, it's pretty far to get to Pluto.
So thanks, James, for sending in that story. Our next one, it comes to us from Oddity Central. Hundreds of birds mysteriously dropped dead during a New Year's Eve celebration. Photos and videos showing scores of dead birds on the streets of Rome following a recent New Year's Eve celebration have been doing the rounds online, fueling all sorts of conspiracy theories. We're not a conspiracy theory show. We talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, but sometimes we hang out on the same bowling league, the conspiracy shows and myself. Hundreds of dead birds were lying around the Temerini train station in Rome, Italy on New Year's Eve, and although the exact cause for the tragedy remains a mystery, animal groups have blamed traditional fireworks shows. The Italian capital has announced a fireworks ban ahead of New Year's Eve, but it was largely ignored. I feel like Rome and Chicago have something in common. The Italian branch of the International Animal Protection Organization, or OIPA, has called for a nationwide ban of selling fireworks and firecrackers for personal use following the sad incident. I was on duty during the hours of my work when I was passing by through a cavar, a street near Central Train Station, Diego Franceschia, a Rome taxi driver told the Oddity Central. I did not understand at first what was on the ground. Later, I realized that they were dead birds, and there were hundreds of them. a really bad scene, and it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and causes could have been due to fireworks. At least that was the first thought I had. I'm not a scientist or a veterinarian, neither are we, so I can't take responsibility for saying with certainty what was the reason. Francesca's final suspicion was shared by the animal protection organizations as well. OIPA spokesperson Loredano Dieglo saying that they were a variety of which ways the birds could have died as a result of a loud and bright firework display. It could be that they died from fear, Diego said. They fly up together and knock against each other or hit windows or electric lines. Let's not forget they can also die of heart attacks. But birds were literally falling from the sky dead.
On New Year's.
Huh? On New Year's. That's one way to ring in the New Year.
Yeah.
Hashtag panic steak.
Not a good sign when you're out there on New Year's and you're hoping for a brighter future, a better year than 2020.
And just birds, are falling from the sky dead.
The sky. I did have a situation though like this one time, Bob.
You watch birds from the birds fall from the sky dead.
Just one fell right, maybe a few feet in front of me.
You know, I'm gonna have to consult with the witchy community on this, but I know that's some sort of like bad omen.
Yeah,
wow. You know,
it happened years ago. Look,
I had that happen to me recently-ish. I was actually at the Shaker Cigar Lounge in Milwaukee. It was me, the Queen of the Night, James from Peoria, and his partner, Alicia. And we were up there. This was pre-pandemic when the world was normal. And we were sitting down. We were having a cigar because we heard the place was extremely haunted. Mm-hmm. And Kale, our friend Kale from KS Paranormal in Milwaukee, was like, oh, check that place out. It's pretty legit. So we go in there, and the place is gorgeous, right? And, you know, I partake in a cigar once in a while. So, you know, I order a cigar, and I order a Sazerac, one of my favorite drinks in the world.
Is that what you
– yes.
A cigar drink?
It's you can drink it without the cigar, but
okay.
God, I do love a good Sazerac.
Okay.
Folks, I'm over the age of 21. I partake very safely and responsibly, FYI.
Like a sarsaparilla.
I've never had one.
It sounds like it's the same family.
No, it's fun fact, the Sazerac is actually more of a New Orleans drink.
Really?
Yeah, you line the your glass in absinthe,
mm-hmm.
and then you do other things inside
wow.
the drink. But and you turn the glass as you drink it to get the absinthe to come up with the drink.
How about that?
You have one Sazerac and you're good. You don't need any more Sazeracs. But man, I love it. Anyway, I'm digressing. So
it's kind of a drinking podcast.
So we're listen. Okay, you know, spirits and spirits do cross
do.
Over.
Yeah.
However, folks, you know, our little ghoul scouts or people that are training do not drink before a paranormal investigation.
No.
No, we don't advise it. It'll throw off your readings. It'll throw off your vibe. Enjoy a drink after your investigation. But if you're just going to a haunted bar, I do recommend you partake and, you know, make sure that you help fund the place that you're hanging around
mm-hmm.
at. Anytime I'm at a convention, I'll drop off at a bar that I hear is haunted just to get a good feeling for the environment around me and all that good stuff.
You got to get some booze after you track the booze.
that's a good slogan.
Somebody
but make sure
that.
You guys drink responsible.
Yes.
Drink responsible, don't drink and drive, and don't drink underage.
There
those
you
are my those are my three rules there, but I digress. So we're at the Shaker's Bar. We pull up, and I kid you not, we're outside the cigar lounge, and we pull up, and we're sitting there staring out the window for a second. I kid you not. Two or three birds just dropped dead right outside
really?
The building in front of us, like in the car. And we didn't even get into this place, and all of a sudden we're seeing birds falling and dying.
Is that known to happen around that bar?
I don't know.
It's haunted.
It's haunted, I could tell you that. I remember turning to James and I said, man, that's not a good, you know, good sign of what's to come after we get into this place. And that place, by the way, if you guys are ever in the greater Milwaukee area, Shaker's is a great place to kind of go. And if you enjoy cigars or if you enjoy a cocktail, it's a cool place to hang out. But they also do ghost tours, which I didn't get a chance to do while we were there. But, man, that place is like the energy in that place will eat you alive if you're not prepared for it. It's heavy.
Even if I'm just sitting at the bar?
Yeah, I'll tell you, we had kind of experience of just sitting there enjoying socializing. It was that was a moment.
Mm.
But I digress. Birds falling from the sky, bad omen, probably a bit, I think that was in the, Book of Revelations talking about stuff like that falling. I don't like to talk about, you know, an animal death. That's not my thing. I am an animal lover, very much so, and I am, you know, a supporter and all of those things. And I hope it was a freak accident, nothing natural happening, because that just sounds like a really bad omen, and that's very unfortunate for those birds, too.
Yeah.
And it's got to be even more unfortunate for the people that were witnessing that live. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, man, you know, 2020's over, let's move in, and then you get into 2021.
You almost think that it was end times, possibly, you know, because
absolutely.
You're seeing that.
All right. You want to move on to some something a little brighter news?
Sure.
Panic. All right, so Massachusetts lawmaker wants to name the official state dinosaur. This comes to us from the Huffington Post. State Representative Jack Lewis wants residents to vote on one or two of the dinosaur species discovered in Massachusetts. But first, the Framingham Democrat is asking residents to select one or two names of the species discovered in Massachusetts. Okay, I'm going to attempt the scientific term on this. Podokiosaurus holokinesis. Oh. I think I got that right. Podokiesaurus holokinis. We'll just make this easier. The swift-footed lizard of Holyoke was first discovered near Mount Holyoke in 1910 by Mignon Talbot, the first woman to name and describe a dinosaur, according to Lewis. The species was about 3 to 6 feet, or in about 1 to 2 meters in length, and approximately weighed about 90 pounds, or for our fans across the pond, 40 kilograms, and was estimated to run between 9 and 12 miles an hour. The other species, we're going to try this again, Anchiosaurus polyzeus, Anchiosaurus polyzeus, which means much the sought-after near lizard, was discovered in 1855 in Springfield. They were no more than 6 feet long and 60 to 75 pounds, or our friends across the pond, 27 to 34 kilograms. Paleontologists have served as consultants for the project, and so they're digging up these bones. We have these dinosaurs now. I guess they're more in abundance. And the Massachusetts lawmaker, they want to name the official state dinosaur, so they need to come up with a name for it.
Okay. Well, I got a take on this.
I hope you do. Hashtag panic stake.
So why can't every state have something like this? I mean, I get dinosaurs were discovered there, but, I mean, where we broadcast from, the state of Indiana, just outside Chicago area, how come we don't have a state dinosaur?
That's a great question.
I mean, we had to find something probably buried here at some point.
But I don't think anybody's ever thought about naming the dinosaur of our area.
Because, I mean, that's a pretty fascinating thing, because there's the state bird. Every state has a state bird.
Yes.
There's a state flower.
A state tree.
A state tree. Why can't every state, like Massachusetts, have a state dinosaur?
I guess you would have to have a archaeological, like, big find in every state.
Well, I know. I was digging in Kosciuszko Park as a kid and came across some dinosaur bones. So
did you really?
Yeah, if they're in Chicago, then there have to be other places in Indiana, too, right?
All right. I for one, I'm not from Massachusetts, but I, for one, would like to propose a name for these dinosaurs.
Yes.
Bob and Panic.
Well, there. That's simple, too. And it's much easier than these names that you've
been throwing
out.
I'm sitting there. I'm like, well, let me just dive right into my old concepts of what how to pronounce these dinosaur names.
Yeah. Or keep dinosaur names simple, like that one at the museum.
Sue. Sue from the Field Museum in Chicago.
One syllable.
We talked about the Field Museum last week on the show.
Yeah. Sue.
But no, Bob and Panic.
Okay.
I think they should name those dinosaurs that.
Oh, well, think about it if they're listening out there in Massachusetts.
Listen, I do know we have fans in Massachusetts. I'm very much aware. Hi, Josh. I need you to get in touch with these lawmakers and tell them you want to name them Bob and Panic after the host and producer of world-famous podcast and radio show Bob After Dark.
I just saw James chime in here. He says there is a state dinosaur and or fossil for almost every state. I got to look this up, Bob. We might be in.
I'm sure
something.
Okay, so look, if whoever is in charge of naming these dinosaurs, Chicago, yeah. Indiana, whatever, maybe we might get a little luckier with them naming them after us here, but I think they should name the dinosaurs Bob and Cal Panic.
All right. We'll make a, how can we, a petition? Is that what we say?
Sure. Petition. We're going to petition the state of Massachusetts or whoever. Listen, if I could go down in history and being like, oh, that's the Bob After Dark dinosaur, that would be, there's my staple, like, there's my legacy 1,000%, you know, generations to come. And somebody, Thomas Hall, chimed into the chat and said, Indiana is one of six states that does not have a state dinosaur.
What?
Okay.
A travesty.
Absolutely.
That means more than ever we need one.
We need one now. And we'll name, and if we can only find one, we'll name it Bob Panic.
Okay. Some weird crossover.
It's morphing. First name Bob, last name Panic. Yeah. And we'll look, we need that dinosaur named after us. It's very important.
How come we don't have a dinosaur? I mean,
I'm sure there's a scientific explanation. I just wanted to share a heartwarming story after that.
54 states, 55 states, and we can't have a good
one. We have
50
states.
50 states, and we can't
55 states?
We can't even have one dinosaur.
What? Where did you come up with 55 states?
Never mind that. What is the next state?
Listen, people give me trouble all the time about me goofing things up, misenunciations. I remind you about the Easter Island massacre. I want you guys to remember this forever. Hashtag 55 states.
I know.
I want you guys, anytime you ever bump into us at a convention or you see me, just come up to me and say 55 states instead of reminding me about the Easter Island massacre, which, by the way, is on a T-shirt you could buy.
Easter.
The Easter Island massacre. That was an adventure.
Well, we have, like I said, we don't have the fact that we don't have a dinosaur for the state of Indiana. Maybe just make a whole new state and put it.
That'd be 56 states.
56 states. Then. No, but it's long overdue. Let's get one going for us.
Absolutely. Our fan, by the way, sent in the review because I can't read it for whatever reason.
Okay.
It's just a day. And by the way, the tagline of the Dragon's Inn podcast is metaphysical witchcraft and folklore. I don't know if it's in that order, but it's the three. This 5-star review comes to us from the Stick Switch, and it says, always entertaining and informative, and the guests are always excellent, especially that James from Peoria. He knows his stuff.
Wow.
Thanks for something fun to watch on Tuesday nights and keep up the good work.
There you go. See?
So to James, I'm sorry. Maybe we spilled. I don't know. I'm just assuming it's James because of this person being a fan of James from Peoria.
We don't know. Maybe it's somebody that knows him.
Okay. Well, either way, to the Stick Switch, thank you for your 5-star review. A toast.
A toast once again there.
A toast.
Two toasts.
All right. Hey, Count.
Yeah.
You want to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, folks, for our live fans at home, stick around because we'll be right back. And to our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a show that you should be watching. Stick around.
Hey, true believers and new believers, this is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back.
Wow. Good to be back.
Hi, Count.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Doing good. You know, I want to start this episode off with the lore of the week part of the show.
Oh, wait, what'd you do during the break?
Oh, God, I forgot about that. What'd you do during break?
I went digging for some fossils. If we could get that Indiana thing going.
I actually went to Massachusetts to petition to get those dinosaurs named after us.
How's it going so far down there?
They're considering it.
Good.
Bob and Panic.
Good.
I did say the Panic dinosaur, when you guys arranged the fossil to be shown, that it'll actually have a cape.
That'd be something.
The first vampiric dinosaur.
With fangs and everything? How terrifying would that be if there was a
vampire
blood-sucking
dinosaur
out there back in the day?
Anyway, I want to share a quick story with you, Cal,
sure.
About this episode. So I was on the phone with Steve, you know, Steve Michaels, our friend and sometimes co-host, professional wrestler. You can buy his merch at Pro Wrestling Tees/Chicago Bear Hug. I can't believe I just said that out loud without him in the room. He's probably laughing somewhere. But I was having trouble thinking about what I wanted to do this week because we only got a couple weeks left until February, and I have a theme month planned for February. I'm very excited about it, by the way.
Dinosaurs.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So I have a theme month picked out for February, and I'm going to be announcing that tomorrow. All right?
Okay.
Follow me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm like, well, what am I going to do? I got two episodes left in January. It's not themed by any means, so, you know, I got to pick something out of a hat. So I was just like, hey, Steve. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, pick a state. I didn't tell him what it was for. And Steve's like, Texas. I'm like, okay, pick a city in Texas. Silence for a moment, and he said, San Antonio?
Mm.
And I said, there we go. You picked this week's episode. Not this week's, but, well, this week's, yeah. I said, you know, you picked the episode of Bob After Dark we're doing.
Oh, so like, you go investigate the city of San Antonio.
Absolutely. No, I got, you know, we got research. There's a lot of fascinating things about it.
That's not a bad concept. I mean, when you're, that's, just ask people, hey, city and state, and let's go.
Exactly. You know, the concept of throwing a dart at the board?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Listen, guys, I assure you that the episode topics sometimes are extremely planned well in advance when we have theme months,
yes.
Thalor month or something like that. And, you know, we have topics, and then there's times when we don't have theme months, and you're like, what are we going to do? So sometimes you just have to take a phone call from your buddy to get an idea of what you're going to be doing your show on this week.
We should have a big wheel of cities and states on, and then spin it.
The Bob After Dark wheel of spooky.
Yeah, and then spin it from time to time.
Listen, there's anybody out there with a building mindset that can do these things?
That'd be pretty cool.
Because I can't, I'm not, maybe I can't build a wheel.
I don't know.
But either way, it just worked out that way.
Like, you think about it, we'll put it in here. You can walk over to the board and then spin it. But you have to do it live on the spot. That's,
and it's like, okay, hold on. Let me just get my get all of my research for everything on this wheel down.
Well, you can still spin it in the studio. And then next week, just come back.
Next week. That's not a terrible idea.
We'll have it out just in case for moments like this.
Let's put a pin in that.
Okay,
I'm glad we could pitch ideas back and forth.
Yeah, live on the air, too.
Live on the air. Pitch it. This is our creative meetings, by the way. Kyle, what are we going to do this week? I don't know.
We spend the whole episode talking about future episodes.
So, no, it was funny because, you know, Steve was telling me, you know, he's like, oh, San Antonio, you know, he's like, I didn't pick that because of the reason, but he was like, so Steve, he's like, I stayed when he was in San Antonio for a wrestling show right before the pandemic hit, so like the last big promotion he was able to do. And he told me he picked out a hotel at random, and when he got there and walked in the door, the energy of the hotel was so heavy that Steve's like, huh, this is a place that I think Bob should stay at. He did some research, and come to find out, the hotel is haunted and it holds a very dark past. So this week on Bob After Dark, we're just going to be doing some highlights of some of the most haunted and interesting spots in San Antonio. There is one spot in particular we're going to talk about that is going to get a dedicated episode down the line. But this week, we're just going to talk very briefly about it because I have the whole history segment. I'm going to pull a Pat from Ghostly and give you Bob facts about it. But let's start off with a story coming from Steve, and this place is called the Sheridan Gunter Hotel. I want to give a quick shout-out to Ghost City Tours. They are a San Antonio-based paranormal touring company, so post-pandemic, you guys are out doing vacationing in that area if you're going to do, like, to visit the Alamo or whatever. I recommend you guys do a tour with Ghost City in San Antonio because they were very fantastic with their research here. Seated in the center of historic San Antonio, the Sheraton Gunter Hotel is an impressive sight to behold. 12 stories tall, beautiful tan brick, and a flair of elegance that can only be found in old properties. The Sheraton Gunter Hotel has this all in spades. It's a blend of old and new, modern amenities and timeless elegance, trendy cuisine in its restaurant and bar, Bar 414, and historical significance. On January 9th, 2007, the Sheraton Gunter Hotel was awarded for historic importance and listed on the United States National Register of Historic Places. The Sheraton Gunter is one-of-a-kind place. It is part because in the 1830s, it has almost always been a hotel, though under many different management and many different names, and also is largely because of extreme minority in 1965 at no fault of its own. In 1965, San Antonio's most mysterious and brutal murder took place inside one of the Sheraton Gunter's guest rooms. Since then, it appears that the residual energy from that terrible night replays over and over again, leaving a paranormal imprint on the Sheraton Gunter Hotel that is certainly never asked for. Since 1837, just a year after the fall of the Alamo, there stood a hotel on current Sheraton Gunter Hotel land. It went by the same name, the Settlement Inn. Some called it the Frontier Inn, but the message was all the same. The owners have been relatively unimaginative, and the inn's name came from the fact that San Antonio, in fact, the borderland at the time. Frontier, indeed. The inn was situated at the corner of what was then referred to as El Paso and the El Rincon streets. As one author puts it, the inn had the best location in the center of a bustling town that sprawled comfortably across along the banks of the winding San Antonio River. When the Mexican cavalry swept into the town and tried to recapture the city of San Antonio in 1842, they were met with no luck. The Republic of Texas stood strong. The frontier had been established, and its people were sturdy and resilient. The Settlement Inn was much the same and survived both attempted tragic attempts on the Mexicans' behalf to claim what they had lost less than a decade earlier at the Battle of San Jacinto. Soon the Settlement Inn would be lost when new ownership emerged. This is when the hotel got a little bit of a military history. For $500, the Settlement and Frontier Inn was purchased and demolished in 1851. Irish immigrants William, John, and James Vance had visions for the Settlement Inn. Times were changing and they itched to be a part of that progress. The street names at the corner were the inn sat, changed to Houston and St. Mary Street, and that was most minute of the progress being seen in San Antonio. The Vance brothers erected a two-story building in its place of the inn, and it subsequently rented out to the United States Army for the next decade. During that period, the property operated as the local headquarters for the Army. Once the Civil War broke out, the went from the United States Army to being the housing headquarters for the Confederate Army in Texas. And after a bit of that not working out, they ended up changing names, and in 1886 they changed the name to the Mankey Hotel, named after Ludwig Manting, who bought the hotel at that time. And then by the 20th century, the frontier was no longer the frontier, and San Antonio finally was hitting its stride thanks to the arrival of the railroad, but also thanks to tourism. So the hotel went through a very colorful past.
I'd say.
We went from the mysterious, startings of the strange hotel to it growing into military headquarters, to military headquarters of the Confederate Army, to then just becoming a really popular residence spot. And apparently, it's one of the most haunted. Like many haunted locations in San Antonio, people are saying the Sheraton Gunter Hotel have seen the spirits of fallen Alamo defenders. There have been reports of dips in temperature, microclimates, the kind where you can feel your hair stand up and a chill whispers down your spine. Others experience the sensation of being watched, of glancing over your shoulder in the expectation of somebody to be there, and, well, they're not. Apparently, there are two flapper ghosts, 1920s flappers, that hang around there, or what they believe to be flappers. The first spirit, who has been given the name Ingrid, is often seeing a long white dress, of course there's a lady in white, While she ambles along to the upper floors of the hotel, Sam the Second alternatively is named Peggy. By the way, this is two ghosts that don't get along. Though the women are said to haunt opposing sections of the hotel, guests have reported hearing them actually in heated arguments. And wow. That leaves to wonder, is there a thing as ghostly territory? Do you fight over your property if you're one ghost fighting another one?
That is interesting. And that's something that's not really talked about enough, I feel like. Ghost infighting in the afterlife. You know, you go to a lot of these places there, Bob, and you investigate. And you probably run across maybe a few different personalities at any given point. Do they ever run into each other? And if so, do they get along? Interaction between the ghosts.
That's a good question. I've been on investigations where I've seen multiple spirits try to reach out at the same time. Mm-hmm. Whether they're aware of each other, I don't know.
But can they see each other?
I can say that I've heard ghosts interact with each other, and if there's a more dominant energy in the room, perhaps the more dominant energy ghost is the one kind of leading the pack there. Where some ghosts are more afraid to step out and say something or communicate with you because they're afraid of something else there. So I would say that there's, definitely a fight of domination between spirits that might be there, but I've never heard of a straight argument breaking out between two ghosts. This is a first for me.
Yeah, I know. Well, we just wonder what the topic is then in that case. What exactly are they fighting over? Could be you, Bob.
I doubt it.
Maybe whoever goes in there, sometimes, certain gender may be attracted to the other gender and things escalate from there. But yeah, I just assume maybe the fight's about something like that. Could be wrong, though.
One of my favorite ghost stories from the Sheraton Gunter is one of Robert Johnson. I don't know if you're familiar with Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson.
He was the famous blues artist who died at the age of 27. Some people believe that he sold his soul for the ability to play guitar. Brilliant story. We'll cover him at another time. But apparently, he was in the room 414, and when he was in room 414, he actually recorded a song while he was there. And apparently, he is still hanging out around there. And in 2009, John Mellencamp actually went to the Gunter, stayed in room 414, just to record an album because he said he felt drawn to the spot. Mm. And the bar at the Sheraton Gunter is called the 414 in reference to the room that Robert Johnson actually recorded in and where his ghost is supposedly at.
See, that's the first time I heard maybe... It's a cool story, of course, the whole thing about selling your soul to learn how to master the guitar. I only heard up until that point going down to Georgia to have a fiddle off with the devil, but it's kind of similar.
You're stealing my jokes too early about the basement and the Alamo
there,
Cal Panic.
All right, we'll use it later. Rehash it. But, no, that's interesting, Bob. Very interesting.
I find it really cool. Like I said, Robert Johnson is... a very, very famous blues songwriter, and his big song "Me and the Devil Blues" was like his big hit, and people always thought that song was about him selling his soul to the devil for the opportunity to play the music that he did.
Mm.
Robert, in reality, was a bit of a drinker. He really enjoyed enjoyed spirits, if you will, and there's talks of what could be. What could have been that actually did it? So that's the story of Robert Johnson in room 414. And then there's the murder. The haunted room 636. In February 1965, San Antonio's largest unsolved murder would take place at the Gunter Hotel. Albert Knox checked into his room on February 6th. He was a blonde man, said to be quite handsome, like yours truly. A charmer, really, according to some. Knox was coming off of a drinking binge, of course. According to others, Knox was still in the thick of that partying run, content to thrive on chaos until he sobered up and went back home to his parents' house. For 2 days, guests of the Gunter saw Albert Knox come and go with very with a very tall woman. The inquisitive gazes that followed the couple labeled the woman as a lady of the night. We'll just say that. Though no one ever knew for certain who she was. But on February 8th, one of the hotel's housekeepers was bringing some items up to Knox's hotel room, room 636. Maria Luisa Guerrera noted the Do Not Disturb sign on the door, but paid it no attention. Most people tended to forget to take those down, even when they already checked out of the hotel. Guerrera pushed open the door, only to stop dead in her tracks. Standing at the foot of the bed, Albert Knox stood with a bloody bundle in his arms. Blood splattered on every inch of the guest room, like a mosaic or stained glass painting on its walls.
Eerie.
In the face of Guerrera's horrified expression, Knox lifted up one finger to his mouth and said, "Shh." The housekeeper's mouth parted out in a scream, and Knox used that moment to dash past her out of the room, and it took 40 minutes for Maria Luisa Guerrera's report to make it to management. By that time, Albert Knox disappeared. The evidence remaining in room 636 was clear. Somebody had died brutally. In a 1976 interview about the crime, Detective Walter Corky Dennis, who passed away in 2011, commented that it was the bloodiest place I have ever seen up until then. The bathroom was especially bad and just sticky with the blood all over the place. The other detectives noticed the bathtub had a red ring around it, like it had been drained of blood. The San Antonio police suspected dismemberment, and one of the witnesses to the 2/4 only further pushed this idea. The day before the murder, Knox visited the local Sears department in search for a meat grinder. When the Sears employee informed him that they didn't have any larger size that Knox wanted, the employee offered to order one from the warehouse. For Knox, however, that was just took too long. He stormed off in a huff. Little evidence was found inside the room. A lipstick-smeared cigarette, brown paper bags, luggage from the San Antonio Trunk and Gift Company. The purchase for the suitcase was made by a check from John J. McCarthy, who happened to be the stepfather of the 37-year-old Walter Emmerich, who disappeared on one of his drinking binges at the end of January and stole his parents' checks and some of their items. Police scoured the city for the woman's body, so sure were that someone had been murdered. They checked construction sites and sections of streets that have the cement that were being laid in. On February 9th, a blonde man walked into the St. Anthony Hotel, just one block away from the Gunter. He came with no luggage and requested to book a room. He made it known that he wanted room 636. The particular room was not available, and after some arguing, he settled for room 536, and he checked in under the name Roger Ashley. Do we have a caller?
We do.
Who do we have on the line?
We have John on the line here.
Hey, John, you're on the line.
Hey, Bob, how's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going good. What's going on?
Hey, that's an interesting topic, two ghosts fighting. How would you envision that? I mean, would they go with fists, or would they go with weapons, or what do you think?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm hoping that Pete's still listening and can chime in with something on that, because I've been on a lot of investigations, and I've never heard two ghosts just bicker in an argument. Maybe I would argue that in a residual haunting, if there is people who died amongst an argument, that maybe that argument lives on in, you know, just the energy that's left behind there. An argument does have a big energy footprint. But as far as an intelligent haunting where two ghosts interact with each other, cohabitate, and then bicker with each other, I don't think I know of a story offhand that has something for that. I hope Pete or somebody from Northwest Indiana Paranormal or anybody really listening has an experience where two spirits just get into a bickering match. And I'm not talking fight of angels and demons or something. I'm not talking like a fist fight, but like a bickering match. I've never heard that before in an EVP. But for next week's episode, John, I'm going to see if I can do some scouring.
Well, you know what? Another thing is, what would they be arguing over?
That's what I don't know.
Woman,
so,
space,
walks too loud. Their haunting is causing more scares than another. I don't know, but I am, however, going to look into this for next week for you, John.
Yeah, That sounds good. I'll be listening as always, Bob.
Thank you so much, Don. Appreciate you.
Take care.
All right.
Now, these hotel rooms, Bob.
Back to it, yes. Right. And then we're going to move on to the next story, but I wanted to finish the
go ahead. And then I have a question here.
Oh, yeah. Roger Ashley. The gentleman who checked into 536 was named Robert Ashley, but the man had aroused the suspicions of the front desk attendants, and after tipping the San Antonio police that the murderer might have just checked into their hotel, the detectives rushed over. They hurried to room 536, banging on the door. The police tried to apprehend Walter Emmerich for the crimes, but they struggled to open the door, and they heard a single hollow sound of a gunshot. Walter Emmerich had killed himself and taken whatever information he had to the grave. In the 50 years that have passed since those fateful nights, the women's identity have never been discovered, and no missing persons reports have resurfaced. About 10 years ago, however, the former manager of the Gunter received an envelope with no return address. It was directed to the Gunter, not the Sheridan Gunter, and had the zip code dated back to 1965. Inside the envelope was an old room key, the one for room 636, and was the kind used during that period. To this day, members of the San Antonio Paranormal Investigations Group, or SAPI, have conducted many of its investigations at the Sheridan Gunter, and have had their psychics attacked by a mysterious force. I have heard screaming EVPs. People that have stayed in that room or near the room have heard blood and curdling screams in the middle of the night. Management is very much aware of it. So that's rather chilling story. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the few times that the paranormal and the true crime cross over with each other.
I know Pete chimed in here, said he never seen bickering or arguing before. So maybe first
thanks,
is
Pete.
On his way, I feel like.
Appreciate it. All right, Pete, we're going to do some research. Yeah. I want to see if I can find a story where ghosts bicker. James, if you're still listening, and if you've ever heard a story of that too, I'd appreciate it.
Now, these hotel rooms, that stuff happens, and say there's a grisly murder or something tragic happens.
Yeah.
Are those rooms closed off for good? Or do they have to tell you, hey, this room?
I don't think you can rent out rooms that, like, I don't know. That's a good question. I do know that you can, if you go to the Milwaukee hotel where, what's his face? I just lost my train of thought. The serial killer from Milwaukee, the one who was eating people.
John Wayne Gacy.
Not John Wayne Gacy.
No,
excuse
he wasn't me. Eating people.
Dahmer. Jeffrey Dahmer. Jeez, I just had a complete brain meltdown there.
Go ahead. Continue on.
So you can rent the room that Dahmer had. And apparently that's a popular request, is to stay in the room that Dahmer had the people at.
Well, yeah. Well, but, I mean, if something happened, but say the hotel doesn't list it as. We had this discussion about, you know, if you have a house and something happens in the house, you got to tell the realtor to, hey, something happened in this house. Same thing with the hotel. I feel like if something happens in the room, well, then that room may be blocked off for good. Or at least if you're going to keep that room open for people, you got to tell them what happened.
Yes.
So, I don't know. There was a movie about this, wasn't there?
I believe so, with John Cusack.
I think so. I forget the name. It was like Room Something.
Pete chimed in and said the hotels will change the names, the numbers around quite a bit, so people aren't trying to stay in those types of rooms.
How about the sixth floor? Is there a sixth floor in a hotel?
You never find one.
Is that really true, though? I don't know if I ever paid
attention
to that.
I've stayed at a lot of hotels in my day, especially being on the road for Bob After Dark. You never see that floor.
Really?
Yeah.
That might just be a thing that they... It's like something you have to check out for yourself. So there's never really a sixth floor.
No.
To go to the Best Western tonight and see.
All right. Let's move on to the next one. And guys, I'm only going to touch base about this subject. It's going to be quick. Because we're going to dedicate an episode to this in the future. Count Panic, have you ever been to the Alamo?
No, but I remember it.
Have you ever found out that there was a basement in the Alamo?
I didn't know there was a basement in the Alamo.
There's not a basement in the Alamo. I cracked that joke to somebody because they were asking me what my show was about today, and they just stared at me. And I said, you know, my episode's going to be about trying to find the basement in the Alamo. Mm-hmm. And they just stared at me. If you guys get this joke, let me know. I'm not going to say it out loud, but there is no basement in the Alamo. Mm-hmm. I digress. So this building in particular is a famous battle site during a war. We're going to just go real quiet off of that. And I'm only going to tell a few ghost stories about it. But in March every year, a few days after the final demise of the Alamo, numerous people report being awakened in the early hours of the morning by the sounds of horse galloping on the pavement. Many believe that the unseen riders, James Allen, who was the last courier to leave the Alamo on the evening before its battle, wandering relentlessly, he is thought to be attempting to return to the Alamo with his report from Colonel Travis. Stories are also told of a tall, thin man and small children that are often seen on the roof of the Alamo mission at sunrise. In the final hours of the siege, Colonel Juan Andrani, as well as several Mexican officers, stand as they were horrified when they saw a man with a small child in his arms leap to the ground near the rear of the Alamo church. Two other small boys have spied upon tour groups on the property. Seemingly, these lads just appear behind the group, and just as quickly as they appear, they vanish, and there's no trace of them to be found. These are thought to be the sons of the Alamo artillerymen Anthony Wolf, the boys aged 9 and 12, that were killed in the final assault. Hiding in the Alamo mission, they were mistaken as Alamo defenders and killed by the advancing army. Another ghost who is seen there is a very popular actor, maybe you've heard of him, John Wayne.
Yes.
The Duke directed and acted in the 1960 film, The Alamo, and when he became obsessed with history. Insisting on the historical accuracy, he personally toured the Alamo on several occasions and consulted the actual blueprints of the fortress before spending something like $1.5 million recreating the exact replica of the old mission in Texas. In addition to the replica of the mission, an entire village was constructed for the movie, which has since become a famous tourist attraction and has also been a set for other films. Shortly after he died, staff and visitors began reporting sights of John Wayne walking around the Alamo, just hands on hips, staring at walls.
So that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be something. So if you go to the Alamo, you can see John Wayne.
Apparently the ghost of John Wayne.
That's interesting.
Yeah. This comes to us from Legends of America, by the way, so thank you for that bit. Because you do research on the Alamo ghosts, and there's tons of ghost stories that come from it. But I didn't find any about the John Wayne thing other than them, so thank you guys for sharing that bit of information.
Would you travel all that way just to get John Wayne's ghost?
It's one ghost I wouldn't mind bumping into.
John Wayne, one of the finest Western actors of our generation, Bob. Maybe not our generation, a few generations. I don't know. They make no Westerns
anymore.
Give
one more here. At the Alamo Plaza, numerous reports have been made of a spectral woman who was seen walking across the plaza. Legend has it that the female apparition was one of two women who were walking across the mission grounds in the 1700s and were struck by lightning. One of the women died, and the other survived. Some speculate that the woman who was killed on that fateful day is still wandering the grounds of the Alamo to this day.
So John Wayne and that person too as well.
Well, I mean, there's tons of ghost stories about it. That's why we'll do an episode about the Alamo, I promise. But absolutely fascinating stuff, don't you think?
It is fascinating. You know, the Alamo, historic building here in our nation, not just Texas, and a lot of people go to vacation there, but they little do they know. A very haunted area. And who knows? It goes to John Wayne. That's star power right there. I would just go to the Alamo just to investigate on that. What was this horse's name, Bob?
I don't know. What was John Wayne's horse's name?
I'm trying to remember myself. I don't know.
Why do you propose a question and then, you know, I feel silly for getting Dahmer's name on the drop of a hat. Well, now you just bring up a question. You're like, oh, what was his name? And I'm like, I don't know. What was it? You're like, I don't know.
I thought the horse had I don't think it was the same horse in each movie. Like the Lone Ranger had Tonto. I think John Wayne played a different character often, so I don't think the horse was consistent horse. But yeah, I digress. Though.
All right, my last thing I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about was the legend of the haunted railroad tracks.
Okay.
during the night between the 1930s and 1940s, no specific year, and according, and there's many variations to it, a bus carrying students home from school was headed toward the intersection on Villeman and Shane when it came to the railroad tracks. The bus stalled out. The bus driver then noticed a train barreling toward down on them, and the driver rushed to get the children out of the bus, but there wasn't enough time. And the train crashed into the bus, killing 10 of its students and the bus driver as well. There's a more, you know, there's plenty of stories about this that take place, as, you know, you may, as any local ghost story, there's, and you don't have, like, an exact pinpoint, there's always a variation to something. There's always a different part of the legend told by different people. Always, 100% of the time. Right?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as the one for sure thing, unless you have a news reported article that states what happened. But for whatever reason, this track of railroad crossing is said to hold the spirits of many ghosts. Many locals claim that that you can hear the rumbling of sounds of a train nearby and the steam whistle howling and the screeching of the wheels as if the train is grinding to the halt, but never appears. A popular story, locals will tell you that there was an actual crash there that involved the woman on Shane Road one night. As she approached a railroad crossing, she saw a little girl standing alone on the side of the road. She immediately stopped, pulled over, and offered the girl the ride home. When they arrived at the girl's house, the girl was hesitant to leave the vehicle to head inside. The woman assumed that the girl may have ran away from home after a fight with her parents, so she told the girl that she would speak to her mother. When the woman got out of her car, she looked back to give the girl a reassuring smile, but vanished in front of her eyes. The woman quickly reopened the car door, but nobody was there. However, the seatbelt was still fastened. Very similar to the story of Resurrection Mary, yes, and many other vanishing hitchhiker ghost stories, which I did a whole episode about, podcast exclusive. And there's other stories of people, like, you know, going out there and getting EVPs and hearing a bus motor running just on an empty plane of tracks. There is a story of a paranormal group that went out there, spread baby powder on the railroad tracks, and saw footprints appear on them, or train, like, tire treads. But there's always the story of the vanishing hitchhiker, and this one was the little girl on the side of the road by the train area.
You know, I was thinking about this, too, when you mentioned about ghosts having fights amongst each other. If you are a ghost, Bob, there's only so much fun you could really have. And I think one of the biggest joys, if I was actually a ghost, would be hitchhiking. I think you get the biggest kicks if you're a hitchhiking ghost, because you know you're a ghost and you're about to get these people to think that you're real. Then once you get in the car and have a little conversation with them, you just disappear. I think there's, out of all the activities you could do as a ghost, I think that one ranks pretty high up there, to hitchhike. What's normally kind of dangerous to do as a living person.
So you're telling me the one, first thing you're doing as a spirit is you're just going to go hitchhiking.
A hitchhiking ghost, Bob.
By the way, John Wayne's favorite horse was Dollar.
Dollar.
Up here, according to Andy.
So that must have been his go-to horse, if his Absolutely. Favorite horse. Good
so
enough.
So, folks,
fun
those
fact.
Are just some quick ghost stories about San Antonio, some real haunted locations. I found the Gunter Hotel to be extremely fascinating. Not enough to spread the entire episode over, because I wanted to dedicate it all 100% to it, but I didn't have enough to go on to base the entire episode, so I sprinkled a little bit more in there for your guys' enjoyment. The Alamo can take up an entire episode by itself, so maybe in the near future we'll do an episode specifically dedicated to the Alamo and the ghost stories involved.
Remember,
because
Bob,
there's some stories that go on there about, like, monks carrying swords on fire. Yeah. I mean, that's just one of the stories. So maybe next week we'll do the Alamo then.
Remember the Alamo.
Remember the Alamo.
The stars at night shine big and bright deep in the heart of Texas. I think that's how it goes.
I'm impressed. I don't even know what you just quoted, but good job.
Pee-wee.
Pee-wee, huh?
Yeah, Big Adventure. Weren't they at the Alamo?
And guys, again, I want to give a real big shout out to the Ghost City Tours out of San Antonio for helping out with the research for this episode. They're you look at other paranormal groups and other ghost like tour companies in other cities, and you get like a blurb of information about a spot. You know, these people go in full detail about like every spot. There's tons of places I didn't mention in San Antonio just for time's sake, but everything is logged right there in Ghost City Tours. So big shout out to them. If I make it down there post pandemic, now I'd like to see these spots. I would definitely be booking a tour with them because that's really good of them to be able to put up the history like that. So hats off to you, Ghost City Tours.
Have you tried ever to stay in one of these haunted rooms that you have to like get in advance and may pay a little extra? You go out of your way to stay at the haunted room?
I guess I have time to go off the tracks just real quick.
Okay.
I find haunted hotel stories to be one of my most favorite like spots for a ghost story. I love the hotels and I love movie theaters. Mm-hmm. Those are my favorite types of ghosts you can find. Yeah, I've never gone out of my way to stay in a haunted room. It's not like I call the hotel ahead of time and say, hey, put me in, you know, the haunted room. But I've stayed at the Congress Theater in Chicago, and nothing's coming to mind. The Congress is the big one, right? And that entire hotel is completely messed up on many a level paranormally. Beautiful hotel, by the way. If you guys are traveling to Chicago, I recommend you stay there. It's a gorgeous place. But I love it. And hotels in general, even without a ghost story, it's a very liminal like area and very like forbidding and foreboding kind of a place to stay. So I find that find those kind of stories to be very cool. You know, you're walking alone in the hotel like hallways, and you know, you feel really just out of place. And to attach a ghost story to it, absolutely, it's like my favorite.
There you have it. Well, I was wondering about that because I don't know, would I even be able to sleep if I'm in one of those haunted rooms? Probably just want to stay up all night and investigate.
Absolutely.
Why sleep?
Why sleep?
You're there for a reason.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, Count.
Yeah.
Do you have any words of closing for our audience tonight?
No. Great to be here once again, Bob, After Dark. Hopefully y'all enjoyed the show. And I do like the concept because every city out there, Bob, I mean, even the smallest city has a ghost story, I'm sure.
Listen, this episode literally came about by me asking Steve to pick a state.
Yes.
I enjoy that. I found that fascinating that I could go and dig these things up. I've never been to San Antonio. In fact, I've never been to Texas.
Despite the rumors.
Despite all of these great like stories that you get attached to them. And that just goes to show how influential a good ghost story is. It even gets down to, I was looking into it, and I was avoiding the cryptid stuff today, but there's chupacabra sightings in San Antonio like crazy. That's... and were-scorpions.
Mm. Are those a variation of werewolves and scorpions there?
Were-scorpions.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a whole episode right there.
Put a pin in it.
Okay. We're putting a pin in a lot this week.
the wheel of Bob ideas?
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that. That'll be a fun thing. But, Panic, you got any closing words for us?
No, everybody have a great week. Great week. Stay safe out there, and see you back here next week.
Absolutely. Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.